So, there's another verse, and I'll just read this, and we'll do the word-by-word synonyms. Vedanto bhairavannadam chindi vinditi vadinaha asinam chahanam shulai ravradam sarvamarmasu. Repeat. Nairitaha.
Nairitaha.
The demons.
The demons.
They.
Samadhishtaha.
Being fully advised.
Being fully advised.
Bhartra.
Bhartra.
By their master.
By their master.
Vai.
Vai.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Shulapanaya.
Shulapanaya.
Having tridents.
Having tridents.
In their hands.
In their hands.
Tigma.
Tigma.
Very sharp.
Very sharp.
Dhamstra.
Dhamstra.
Teeth.
Teeth.
Kerala.
Kerala.
And fearful.
Fearful.
Ashyaha.
Ashyaha.
Faces.
Faces.
Tamrasrashru.
Tamrasrashru.
Coppery mustaches.
Coppery mustaches.
Shiroruaha.
Shiroruaha.
And hair on the head.
And hair on the head.
Nadantaha.
Nadantaha.
Vibrating.
Vibrating.
Bhairavam.
Bhairavam.
Fearful.
Fearful.
Nadam.
Nadam.
Sound.
Sound.
Chindi.
Chindi.
Chop.
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 That's onomatopoetic. You know what that means? Anyone knows what that word onomatopoetic means?
No. Onomatopoeia.
What does it mean?
It's basically when you make a vowel sound.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what it's supposed to
That's
be.
Right. Chop.
Yeah.
Chop. Interesting. And chindi is also the same. Vindi.
Vindi.
Divide into small parts.
Divide into small parts.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Vadinaha.
Vadinaha.
Speaking.
Speaking.
Asinam.
Asinam.
Who is sitting silently.
Who is sitting silently.
Ja.
Ja.
And. Ahanan.
Ahanan.
Attacked.
Attacked.
Shulahi,
Shulahi,
with their tridents.
With their tridents.
Prarado.
Prarado.
Prahlad Maharaja.
Prahlad Maharaja.
Sarvamarmasu.
Sarvamarmasu.
On the tender parts of the body.
On the tender parts of the body.
Translation, the demons, Rakshasas, the servants of Hiranyakashipu thus began striking the tender parts of Prahlad Maharaja's body with their tridents. The demons all had fearful faces, sharp teeth, and reddish, coppery beards and hair, and they appeared extremely threatening, making a tumultuous sound, shouting, "Chop him up! Pierce him!" They began striking Prahlad Maharaj, who sat silently meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's no purport to this text. So go on to the next text with its purport. Oh, the best devotee just arrived. So, Pare Brahmanya Nirdeshe Bhagavatya Kilatmane Yuktatmanya Palasan Apunyasyeva Sadkriyaha. Translation. Even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will have no result. Thus the weapons of the demons, who had no tangible effects upon Prahlad Maharaj, because he was a devotee undisturbed by material conditions and fully engaged in meditating upon and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was unchangeable, who cannot be realized by the material senses, and who is the soul of the entire universe. So purport by His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Prahlad Maharaj was constantly and fully engaged in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is said, Govinda Parirambitaho. Prahlad Maharaj engaged himself always in meditation, and thus he was protected by Govinda. Just as a small child in the lap of his father or mother is fully protected, a devotee in all conditions is protected by the Supreme Lord. Does this mean that when Prahlad Maharaj was attacked by the demons, the Rakshasas, Govinda was also attacked by the demons? This is not possible. There have been many attempts by the demons to hurt or kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he cannot be injured by any material means because he is always in transcendence. Therefore, the words Pare Brahmari are used here. The demons, the Rakshasas, can neither see nor touch the Supreme Lord, although they may superficially think that they are striking the Lord's transcendental body with their material weapons. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in this verse as Anir Deshi. We cannot understand him to be in a particular place, for he is all pervasive. Moreover, he is Akilatma, the active principle of everything, even material weapons. Those who cannot understand the position of the Lord are unfortunate. They may think that they can kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotee, but all their attempts will be futile. The Lord knows how to deal with them. So, Om Gana Timidam Visha, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena, Tasmai Shigurvam Maha. So, it's interesting how Prabhupada here first talks about Prahlad Maharaj not being injured, and then all of a sudden he enters into the discussion about the Supreme Personality of God and its transcendental body. So, I found that quite interesting thing. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj also had a transcendental body, and he was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so it says that when the Lord wants to protect one, no one can kill one. When the Lord wants to kill one, no one can protect him. And Prabhupada's father used to tell Srila Prabhupada that when Krishna wants to give you something, he has 10 hands. You ever hear that expression before?
Yes.
You can't keep yourself from getting that thing. And when Krishna wants to take something away, he's the expert pickpocket. He can take everything away. So, I think sometimes the question arises that in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he was not hurt, but we do find devotees sometimes getting hurt by the demons. I mean, I remember I went on Sankirtan in Dallas, Texas one time, and I got punched out by a demon. And I was chanting, Nishringa, Nishringa, and I still got punched out. So devotees sometimes, they may lose their faith because they're chanting Lord Nishringadeva's name, and then still something happens to them. But they should understand that when something happens to you that's beyond your ability to control, that's Krishna. I mean, just like you have Dharma the bull. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is, he was being beaten by the personality of Kali, and he's standing on what? What Keshav? What's he standing on? Well, I'm asking him. Oh my God. That's a Keshav test, not a you test. He's standing on one leg, and you're thinking, you know, he's Krishna conscious. He's Dharma the bull. Why the H-E-double-L is he being tortured like that? You know, what happened to Lord Nrsimhadeva? Well, Krishna has his plan. And some, like Prabhupada, also one time got gored by a bull. Prabhupada was on the streets of Delhi distributing his Back to Godhead magazines, and a bull gored. You know what that gored means? It means the horn went into Srila Prabhupada. So why are these things happening to devotees? Well, Krishna puts his devotees in whatever circumstance is favorable for their devotional service. If it means they're going to be physically hurt, then that may happen. They may get in a car accident. They may get in a fight. You know, so many things can happen. And if it means they're going to be protected. So Krishna has his plan. That's the point. And we don't, as pointed out by Dharma the Bull, we don't get angry at the immediate person who's doing that activity, what we call perpetrator. I know that's really heavy, especially when you talk about child abuse, isn't it? You said don't get angry at him. Well, obviously we want to stop it. We want to protect it. We want to protect the children. That's very important to do that. But as far as getting angry at the person, that doesn't solve the problem. Obviously, we want to put him in jail. We want to cut off different parts of his body. You know, the Manasamhita says that you punish a child abuser by cutting off certain parts of his body, and he walks with those parts of the body towards the sun and dies. But it's not done out of anger. The punishment that a king gives to a criminal is not done out of anger. That's called retribution. You understand? Retribution means get even. I feel real good by seeing you suffer. Ha ha. So a devotee should not have that retributive mentality. A devotee should be compassionate towards everyone and protect the innocent, yes. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, going back to the Dharma the Bull story again. Dharma the Bull, as I said, was standing one leg and he was urinating. And Parikshit Maharaj comes up to Kali, gets ready to kill him. And Kali says, I take shelter of you. You know, here is someone who is really bad. And Parikshit Maharaj gives him shelter and even gives him places to live. Right? Mm-hmm. He's committed the most heinous crime, yet he gives him places to live. Of course, he also knows the Lord's plan, that the Lord wants Kali Yuga to come because that's pretty good for preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, Kalaya Doshavivay Rajan. Ashjeko Mahadguna Kirtanadeva Krishna Shri Mukta Sangha Parampajet. Kali Yuga is an ocean of difficulty, but there's one good quality that makes up for that whole ocean of difficulty is that what? Kirtanadeva Krishna Shri. If you chant Hare Krishna, you go back to Godhead. But still, we see that there wasn't that attitude of retribution towards Kali. You know, the anger. So justice has to be something like that. So, obviously, we protect people. However, there is, one should basically understand that I have been put in this situation for a particular reason. You know, even if someone has to undergo the most horrendous type of torture, just like in Russia, there was this one devotee who was actually imprisoned and they were giving him drugs. There was a book about it, Salted Bread. You heard about that before? And you know, obviously, he went back to Godhead, but Krishna sometimes puts his devotees in circumstances like that. Now, we can't think that every time we chant Hare Krishna or Lord Nisringadeva's name that we're not going to get sick, we're not going to get disease, you know, even some terminal illness. Just like recently, I may have mentioned the other day that there was a person, a devotee I was preaching to, and he had a terminal illness, he had cancer. And he was prayed to Krishna, and the cancer didn't go away. And then he sort of got angry at Krishna for the cancer not going away. But you know, you just have to accept the reverses of this material world. So anyway, so Prahlad Maharaj is a very specific case. Don't think that you can do anything and everything and just chant Lord Nisringadeva's name and remember Krishna. You got to take some precautions in this world. Just like if you're driving a car, wear a seatbelt. Apart from the fact that you get a ticket. You know, I was in India, for example, and, you know, I was in Vrindavan taking the taxi to Delhi, and I put my seatbelt on, and the driver said, no, don't put the seatbelt. You don't have to put it on until you get to Delhi. And I was thinking, he's just thinking about not getting a ticket. But I'm thinking of protecting myself. So you have to take some precaution. You know, wear a seatbelt. Just like recently, you know, we heard about a devotee here. here in this area, in Sydney area, who had an accident, and she was driving an old car. The old car was like a tank. It didn't crumple and didn't really protect her, and she got whiplash. So immediately when I heard that, I sent a letter to all the places I visited and said, "You are not allowed to drive me in an old car anymore." He said, "No car more than 8 years old." Your car is more than 8 years old?
Yes.
Okay, forget it. I'm walking. How old is your van?
12 years.
No, it's not 12.
2007.
Is it?
But it does have airbags.
Well, not just, does it crumple?
Yeah.
It okay, so if it's all right, we'll make an exception for you. But the point... That's funny. That's a new one. Anyway. So, obviously, I mean, we have to take precautions. We have to take precautions in this world. We can't just, like, think, oh, Krishna's going to protect me. You know, I don't need to go to see... Another thing is... another. Instance we had recently is that there was a devotee here also who didn't go to see a doctor. She had numbness. I think you know who I'm talking about. You know, very nice devotee. She had numbness in her hands, beginning in the hands, and then went to other parts. And finally she goes to see a doctor after basically the whole body has become kaput. You know the word kaput?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Cindy. So, no, not really. I'm just teasing. After the whole body becomes kaput. And it was almost too late at that point. So devotees should go to doctors and have regular checkups. Take your blood pressure. Take your blood test. And people think, no, Krishna will protect me. But basically, you have to use your brain. You know, Krishna's given you a brain, too. For example, there's that typical story Prabhupada tells, and I'm sure you've all heard it. There was once a very devoted man who was assured that Krishna was going to protect him in each and every instance. And all of a sudden, there was a cyclone, like you have cyclones here, and the water was rising around his house. And a boat came to try to rescue him. And they said, please get in the boat. You know, the water's rising, you know, it's going to be a problem. Just like we had in our New Orleans, which has a temple that I'm in charge of. They had a hurricane, that's what a cyclone's called there. And the water was rising. Unfortunately, in our temple, the temple is actually a high section of the city, so it didn't flood. And we had all the devotees there, Bengali devotees, so they just thought it's just like the Ganges. And they started swimming in the water. And I told them, I said, the water is polluted. This is not the Ganges. They thought it was just like a picnic, like during the rainy season. So, anyway, so getting back to the guy. So the water was rising, and he refused the boat. He said, you know, God's going to protect me. The water rose. He was on the top of the house, on the ceiling, actually the roof. And they sent a helicopter and lowered a rope for him. And he said, no, God is going to protect me. He died, went back to God. At least he was spiritual. At least he chanted Hare Krishna after he drowned. Went back to Krishna. And he says to Krishna, Krishna, I was just chanting your name the whole time. Why didn't you protect me? I chanted Nrisinga, Nrisinga, Nrisinga. And Krishna said, yes, didn't you see, you foolish idiot, the boat I sent for you and the helicopter I sent for you. So, in other words, there has to be some intelligence. You don't put yourself in the middle of danger. You know, sometimes preaching, yes, you can take risks, but they have to be calculated risks. Just like Bhakti Tirthamaraj, he would go to the previous Iron Curtain countries. What's an Iron Curtain, Keshav?
It's a kind of made from iron.
Hare Krishna. So, think about it. Don't tell him. I'm just trying to test him. What's the Iron Curtain? Isha, what's the Iron Curtain?
I guess you could explain
it
as the countries that were part of the U.S.
Yeah, were part of what? Where?
Russia.
Russia. It's called the Soviet Union at that time. Russia's the motherland. Yeah. And the other countries were actually taken over by Russia when?
Cold War.
What? Cold War? No. After World War II. After World War II, the Russians and the Americans went in and they sort of met in Berlin. And that's where there was a Iron Curtain right in the middle of Berlin. It's called the Berlin Wall. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So the point is we have to take adequate measures. So Bhakti Tirthamaraj, he took calculated risks in preaching Krishna consciousness. In certain circumstances, you got to do that. But it should be done with great care. And let's take the example of Haridas Thakur, who actually is an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Brahma, both personalities. So Haridas Thakur was preaching Krishna consciousness and chanting the holy names. And he had a similar experience to that of Prahlad Maharaj, right? Because while he was chanting the holy names, the Muslims, because he was born in a Muslim family, got very upset that he had now become a kafir, an infidel. He went into was an infidel. Oh my God. What's an infidel?
We should get a dictionary.
Look at a dictionary. So Isha, what's an infidel? That's what the Muslims call someone who is a non-believer.
Yeah.
Who's not one of the... In other words, they can be a believer in God,
but
they're not... But that particular sect of the Islamic tradition, you know, if they're Sunni, then the Shiites will call them infidels, and if they're a Sufi, everybody else will call them infidels. So Haridas Thakur, he was not only in their eyes an infidel, but he had previously been one of them because he was born in a Muslim family. So they arrested him. And they asked Haridas Thakur, give up chanting Hare Krishna. What did he say? No way. And he kept chanting. And they said, all right, whip him. 22 marketplaces. So for 22 marketplaces, they were beating him with a whip. And guess what? The whole time he was what?
Chanting
Hare Krishna. And even, this is another point that I made previously in today's class, he didn't get angry with the people who were whipping him. He was compassionate towards them to such an extent that when they were in anxiety that they had not killed him or hurt him, what did he do? Okay, so you should know this.
He faked
dead? Yes, he faked that he was dead. Good. Very good. In other words, because devotee is a yogi, he was able to control his life airs and somehow or other stop, for all intents and purposes, breathing. At least the breathing was very shallow, so no one could detect it. And I guess at that time they didn't have stethoscopes to see whether his heart was beating. But somehow they thought he was dead because he was compassionate upon the people who were beating him. And they decided to throw him into the Ganges, not to bury him, because they thought, if you bury someone, that's pious. That's why? Because there's this conception, along with Christianity, that you need your body intact to go back to the spiritual world. Now, obviously, this body is not going back to the spiritual world. I don't think so. I don't think I'd want it in the spiritual world. I don't think I'd want to live in this body eternally. But they're thinking, like the Christians, they have their day of judgment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those bones shall rise again. You ever hear that expression?
Yes.
So it would be scary to be around a cemetery during that time. have all the coffins open. Like the worst movie you've ever seen in your life. So anyway, so they threw him in the river, floated down the river, and he came out. Chanting Hare Krishna. Now, continuing with that story, was he hurt at all? No. And later on, when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, took off his shirt or revealed his back, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have taken all the lashes that you had on my back. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, they both have spiritual bodies. They're both the same person, isn't it? Ishwara Panama Krishna Sachananda Virada Nadu Radu Govinda Sarvakarana Karnam. They're both a completely spiritual body, or they, or he, you know, God as a spiritual body. So, but this was a manifestation of his love for his devotee. You know, similarly, in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna manifested blood when Grandfather Bhishma was attacking, firing the arrows at him. And how is that? Because it's described as Shnavi Ram. The Lord has no veins. But this is a manifestation of the reciprocal relay, the Rus, between the Lord and his devotees. But technically speaking, he was not hurt. This was just simply a pastime. So anyway, so this is very similar to Prahlad Maharaj's pastime here. Krishna may not give us the same type of protection that Prahlad Maharaj had, but Krishna's protection will be to protect our spiritual lives. That's the point. That's Krishna's protection. And understanding that Krishna's protecting you and maintaining you are two of the items listed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Sharanagati, as surrender. So we should be fully cognizant. Cognizant means aware that Krishna is always protecting us and Krishna is always maintaining us. And when he does something that we don't like, that's also protecting and maintaining. Because Krishna will do things that we don't like. It's not that he's our servant. You know, dear God, give us this day our daily, what?
Bread.
Prabhupada said they turned God into a baker. And that was used against the Christians. When the Russians, they would say to the people, pray to Christ or pray to God, see if you get bread. They didn't get bread. Pray to us and we'll give you bread. So they said, oh, we must be better than God. Or there's no God. There's people very determined to disprove or try to prove that God doesn't exist. So, but we have to have that faith. You know, Krishna puts me in the circumstances, then that's the circumstance. If it's not my fault, don't blame God for something that's your fault. You know, if you go, just like recently I was reading, that people go to this park in the United States, Grand Canyon, you heard of this before?
Yes.
And in the last few weeks they've had several people die. Why? Because they were taking selfies off of a cliff. You know, so if you take a selfie, you know, you're so stupid that you stand on the edge of a cliff and you want to get yourself and your girlfriend holding hands. That's what happened. He actually took, what was it called? Lover's Leap, actually. So they both fell down. Don't blame God for your stupidity. Or if you're walking down the street, and this happens very common in New York, people walking down the street looking at their mobile phones, they walk, the cars hit them, and they get run up. Does that ever happen here? In Sydney? It happens. So don't blame God for your stupidity. So wear a seatbelt, drive a new car. Maybe. I mean, get a safe car, all right.
As long as it's got airbags.
Okay, good, okay. We accept. We accept. You know, just be as safe as possible because Krishna has given you that. facility within the world. And then apart from that, whatever happens is Krishna. But go to the doctor too. You know, so there's a balance there. It's not that I have faith in Krishna, I'm not going to go to the doctor. Not so intelligent. Okay, any questions or comments about these points? I think they're important points, yeah.
The first, in the translation of text 44, the first line, yes. I don't understand.
You don't understand text 44.
I'm sorry, 41. The last.
Okay, really 41.
Yes.
First line.
Yes.
Pare Brahman Yanir Deshe.
The translation.
Pare in the supreme, Brahmani, absolute. What's the problem?
Oh, the translation says, even though a person who has no assets in pious activities performs some good deed, it will be of no result.
Oh, yeah, the translation. Even though a person who has no assets in pious activities, it will have no results.
I take it like this, that even though a person does not have any piety,
yeah,
and if he performs some good deeds, it will not get him any benefit.
That's right.
Yes, but that does not make sense. Even though if I do not have any piety or any good karma, and if I'm going to perform charity, I will get benefit of that, wouldn't I?
Well, it depends on what you consider a good deed. I mean, let's unpack that statement, good deed. Like, if it's not a good deed according to the Manasanghita, and it's a good deed according to your mental concoction, that's what's referred to here, then it doesn't have any good results.
But good deed does not necessarily have to be bhakti or Krishna conscious activities.
No, but we may think something's a good deed. I mean, for example, let's say there's a... Well, I don't want to use that politically incorrect word. How do you say something politically correct about a bum? With a gun called someone who's challenged on the street. What? That's also politically incorrect. You got to say someone who is looking for home. So anyway, so someone who doesn't have a home, because you put the label homeless. Someone doesn't have a home. Okay, that's better. So let's say there's some bum on the street. You don't use that word anymore, do you?
We do.
You do.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's say there's some bum on the street and he asks you for... I mean, I remember this happened to me. I was going through a train station in New York and it was a bum. He said, can I have a dime for some food or, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And so I gave him 50 cents. And the police stopped me afterwards. They said, do you understand what he's going to do with that? And I said, no, I was innocent. Mm-hmm. And they said... He's going to get drunk. He's going to use it to buy liquor. And so then I understood that my good deed actually was a bad deed. Or, anyway, so this, sometimes people think something is a good deed. That may be one way to understand it.
It's more like charity in the mind of ignorance.
Yeah, that's one way to understand it. That's charity in the mode of passion and ignorance.
But that does not mean you stop performing charity.
No, but you do charity in the mode of goodness.
Yes.
In the proper place, proper circumstance, to the proper person, according to the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
So that may be one explanation why Prabhupada says good deed here. What's that?
In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that you have to give to a proper person in most
proper place and proper circumstance, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so most of the time it refers to giving it to a Brahmin.
No, you give to someone. Let's say if you give prasadam to someone.
Yes, I'd rather feed someone who's hungry.
Yeah, but give them prasadam.
Yes.
Why not feed the Brahmins?
I mean, they're already fat and.
All right.
They have enough.
All right, so then don't give me prasadam this morning.
Okay.
You'd rather get, you know, just take all the food that's meant for my breakfast and just go out downtown Sydney and find some homeless people.
No.
They won't take it.
They won't take it. Okay.
They want money so they can buy
yes.
Anyway, so that's the one. That's one way to understand it. Like one is thinking it's a good deed.
Yes.
Another way is that that even though, let's say, if one does some pious activity, it will take some time to have the results. That's another way to understand it. Because impious activities don't negate pious activities.
Yes.
That's interesting. It's not like a bank account.
That's plus minus.
That's a, you know, plus or minus, you know, if I kill you, then I better do a lot of nice things to eradicate the effects. That was mentioned, that was proven in the story of King Riga.
Riga, yes.
You know the story of King Riga? King Riga. King Riga was a very pious king, and he used to give cows away in charity to different Brahmins. And so one time, I think he gave about 10 million cows or 10,000 cows, or some tremendous amount. And one of those cows happened to, you know, wander back into his herd.
Yes.
And he gave it to another Brahmin. And then the first Brahmin saw that the cow that he had been given was given to another Brahmin. They got angry with King Riga, and King Riga had to become a lizard in his next life. That's the problem with pious activities. You make a little mistake and you're in trouble. And then, but it was nice that he became a lizard, because what happened after that, Keshav? What was so nice about the fact that he, because he had done a lot of pious activities, so after he suffered the impious result of giving the cow away twice, what benefit did he get? Not, no one else answered. All right, Isha, what?
He got rid of Krishna, so Krishna put his hand in the well.
Yeah, Krishna put the hand in the well, pulled him out. So, that story proves that you can't really balance out impious activities with pious activities.
Yes.
However, you can get rid of impious and pious activities by doing what?
Bhakti.
Because bhakti actually gets rid of all karma, even what's called prarabdha karma. There's kuta, I don't know if any of you know this stuff, there's kuta, there's bija, there's aparabdha karma and prarabdha karma. You know what that means? Kuta means the inclination to do something. Like, I'm self-centered. You know, that's the inclination. And bija is the seed of desire. Let's say, right now, alright, let's give an example. Let's say, right now, someone's been fasting for 2 weeks. So they don't get angry. Shanti, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Or they don't get lusty. But as soon as they eat again, guess what happens? Then lust and anger comes out again. So that means it's lying there as seed. And the typical example Prabhupada gives is of the chickpea or the garbanzo bean that was lying in the pyramids and then it got watered and then it fructified. So that's kuta, bija, aparabdha, means the result that you're not yet suffering from. Let's say I killed someone and the result is I'm supposed to get killed somehow or other by a king, if it's a pious king. But I'm still getting away with it. I haven't been captured yet. That's aparabdha. Yes. And that prarabdha means what I got here. And that really, really refers to, in a large extent, to the body you have, to the legal difficulties you have, to the diseases you have, to the enemies you have. That's prarabdha karma.
What is destined?
What you have now.
Yes, what you have now.
It's not what is destined.
Okay.
What you're experiencing now. Right now.
Okay.
Aparabdha means what you're destined to suffer or enjoy.
Yes.
And prarabdha, that's the body. You know, that's
what you've got.
And by the chanting of Hare Krishna, even Nama Bash, both prarabdha, aparabdha, kuta, bija, finished.
Yes.
Now, you may say, but I'm chanting and I still get these reactions. Well, this is called a token reaction given directly by Krishna. If you're a devotee, following the principles, chanting 16 rounds a day, you will get a token reaction. What is token reaction? Prabhupada one time explained it like a fan that has some momentum.
Yes.
You unplug the fan,
yes,
the fan continues spinning. But I think the way I usually explain it is that it's not quite karma, it's Krishna applying a token amount of what you were supposed to suffer or enjoy, to remind you of your stay in this material world, to help you become detached. So for a devotee, it's not karma. I mean, something happens right now to me or to you that's not our fault. Remember, we talked about that before. That you wore your seatbelts, drove in a new car. It's not your... Sorry, Beth. No, you keep your car. I will go in, but I will wear a helmet. Oh, it's actually funny. Last time I went to Govardhan, I had a bicycle helmet with me.
Hey, we still have a bike helmet.
And I wore it in the vehicle. Because it was India. Yes. Actually, it was Mayapur, not Govardhan. Because that road, the roads are better in Delhi. So on the way to Mayapur, because the roads are so bad, it's like you're playing chicken at every second. You know what chicken is?
Yes. Yes.
He doesn't know what it is.
He knows it.
Well, when you have two people, it's a racing, when you have two people go head to head.
Oh, that means you run it straight.
You're running into each other, and the person who veers off at the last minute, he's a chicken.
Yes.
We call it run it straight.
Running straight. So, because of that, I wore a bicycle helmet. And everyone was looking, you're crazy. But why not? Why not take precautions? Isn't it?
Yes.
People, I mean, not over precautions. I didn't wear like a spacesuit or something like that, or a football outfit or something like that. Yes. Although that, I was tempted. Because so many devotees have died and got hurt severely on that road to Mayapur.
Yes.
But still, take precautions.
Yes.
I
have a point.
Another point.
Which you raised earlier in the class. I mean, just in relation to the same discussion, that if a king punishes you, that's not out of anger or envy or anything for you, but if he does not punish you, then you will...
Then you have to suffer.
You have to suffer.
Yeah, so that's the reason for capital punishment.
Yes.
In many countries you don't have capital punishment.
No.
Probably not here.
No.
And people think... It's very compassionate.
No.
But it's not, because they're thinking the person is the body. And once you kill the body,
that's it.
He's kaput. Yes. You know, he doesn't exist anymore. But he's going to have to suffer anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it protects society. Why should society have to ultimately put that guy out in the street again?
Yes.
Or pay so much money to maintain that guy for the rest of his life?
Yes.
How much does it cost to maintain a prisoner each year?
A lot.
Probably hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Probably more than what he'd be earning outside.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's just practical. I mean, it sounds real cruel.
Yes.
You know, and people may even equate it like with Sharia law or something like
yes.
that. But, you know, we don't think that we stone people to death just because they have a girlfriend. That's what they... if I did that, you know, I'd be... Stony my disciples today.
On the same point.
Prabhu, please come. Okay, Keshav.
10 stones.
Throw some stones.
Yes, just on the same point.
Yeah, same point.
If you do not, or if you somehow escape the reactions of your action or your karma, then it is going to fructify in the future.
Yeah, it has to come out in the future, yeah. You can't escape. Because Yamaraj, basically, with one point in the Bhagavatam, it describes he's like in your heart. Because he's connected with Krishna, who's in your heart, and he's aware of everything you do. Prabhupada said, Yamaraj has a book. And there's this assistant to Yamaraj called Chitragupta, who writes down everything you do in your life, everything bad. It's nice, isn't it?
Yes.
And so at the end of your life, you get to read.
Isn't it both bad and good? He writes down.
Yes.
And he rewards you too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's something like the material conception of Santa Claus.
Mm.
Except you get rewarded in death. Not every Christmas.
Mm.
Okay, on that happy note, we have to end that.
One more question, right?
Yeah.
So you give an example where the boat comes and he doesn't sit in the boat.
Yeah.
There was another example that there was a devotee walking and a tiger was going to attack him or something.
Yeah.
And then Vishnu was coming to help him out.
Yeah.
But then he picked up a stick and then Vishnu stopped. Is that a genuine story or not?
I never heard that story, but I'll tell you a story that's similar to that. When Raghunath Das Goswami was chanting on the banks of the Radhakund, actually Shyamakund. He was chanting on the banks of the Shyamakund. It was very hot. There's two parts of the story. Very hot in the middle of the summer. The sun was blazing. So Sanatana Goswami came one time to visit him. And he saw that there was a young girl, Radharani, who was holding her shawl over him to protect him. And he chastised them. He said, you're not supposed to take service from Radharani. You're supposed to give service. Build yourself a kutir. But he didn't. So next time Sanatana Goswami comes, he sees a tiger. The tigers would come and drink at Shyamakund. And the tiger is close to Raghunath Das Goswami. And Krishna is standing there with a stick protecting Raghunath Das Goswami. And so Raghunath Das Goswami got chastised again. You must build a kutir. You can't take shelter. Take not shelter, but you can't take protection from Krishna unnecessarily. So he built himself this small kutir, even though he was reluctant to do so. So that's an important story, and that may be where you got your story from. Because the story I told was actually a common broad story. And the point is, we should take adequate measure to protect ourselves and don't turn Krishna into our order supplier.
How do you define
adequate?
Use your brain.
Common sense.
Use your brain, you know. Make sure... Oh.
Someone.
She has to go to work. You have to go to work?
Yes.
Enjoy yourself.
See you later.
Okay.
Bye, Bata.
Bye, Mommy. So, use your brain and make sure you've taken adequate precaution within reason to protect. That's all. I mean, that's all you can do. It's common sense. And that's what I try to do. You know, I do wear a seatbelt, even in India, because I'm conscious of it. I'm not going to say Krishna's going to protect me in each circumstance if I don't take adequate measures to protect myself. Anyway, it requires some intelligence.
So much. Would you say donating to charitable organization is not a pious activity?
Well, it depends on which charitable organization you're talking about. If it's feeding people in Vrindavan, yeah, that's nice. But if you donate to a charitable organization and they're feeding people meat, that's not a pious activity. Because according to Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, there's charity in three modes of nature. You know, so you're actually giving to an improper person, well, sorry about it, and they're using it for other purposes other than Krishna consciousness or other than even pious activities. You have to see.
You know, it's more like, you know, health organizations and things like that. That's what I was sort of...
Cancer research?
Research? Well... That's sort of on the borderline. I wouldn't say that's... I'm not going to criticize that. Because devotees are also benefited from the cancer research.
I think so. One has to come back and reap the benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the thing about pious activities, you're forced to come back and take another birth to reap the benefit. So, yeah, certainly research into helping people... I would say that's probably pious in the mode of goodness. However, on the other hand, that also is material. So it further entangles you in this world. And one gives to these organizations, I mean, depending on the motivation, some people give just because it makes them feel good. And that's the mode of goodness, which entangles one in this world. And then also... You know, I'm not going to tell people not to give to the organizations. I mean, what can I do? But let's say, feeding the people, the Brajavasis, is spiritual activity. It's a little bit different. So sometimes, because we have these programs in Vrindavan to feed the Brajavasis. I mean, even when I go there, I give some money to one of my assistants at Bai. You know Bai? Of course you know. Usually when I leave, I give them some money to distribute to the beggars. And because these are Brajavasis, it's in Vrindavan, then it's transcendental activity. And sometimes people tell me, oh, you shouldn't help Food for Life, Vrindavan, you shouldn't do that because it's all just like mundane pious activity, but it's spiritual. So any charity that I give will be more than a pious activity. It'll be connected with Krishna somehow or other.
One certainly has to come back for maybe that time, maybe some time later they will be rewarded. Just like good example is Bali Maharaj.
Yeah.
He gave it a plane to Lord Bhavandev. But he did not go to the Vaikuntha planet. He was awarded Sutta Lord.
Yeah. And eventually he became Lord Indra. Yeah. After spending time there.
Still
so
waiting.
What?
Is it still waiting to become Indra?
You have to ask him. Yeah.
So Maharaj, can I ask one question? So yeah. In addition to Maharaj's question, so like, so Ruth, say, giving charity to a cancer research institution, right? Mm. And then in our mind, mentally, we just said to Krishna, look, my intention is good. Like, I'm giving this money for the good benefit of people, you know, for the good sense.
It's pious activity.
Then I guess still it's a pious, it's not like transcendental.
No, it's not transcendental.
Even though we offer it to Krishna.
No.
It's not our karma.
No, it's not our karma. It's pious. You get good karma. You get good karma for it. You know, so if you do that, you may find yourself winning a lottery after that. Hopefully not playing the lottery. You know, so it's good karma. It's pious activity. And pious activity in the mode of goodness entangles one in this world. One becomes attached to the sense of happiness, material happiness. But, you know, I'm not going to discourage people. I mean, everybody's on a different level. So, you know, if people do it, you know, that's better than giving to a drunkard in the street.
Sometimes people's mind, if I will get something better to it.
They will, materially.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah. Because people cannot differentiate between the devotional service and fire.
Yeah, so it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
It's better than nothing, you know. Like Krishna in the Gita, the 12th chapter, he talks, hints at this sort of thing. He says, you know, you should always think of me and be my devotee. You can't do that, follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. And if you can't do that, do the results of your activities. You can't do that, you know, be detached from your thing. So it's actually part of the process, according to Krishna in the 12th chapter of the Gita. You know, being detached, you know, giving up the results of your activities and being detached. So it really helps one. Cultivating the mode of goodness is good. I mean, just like cleaning your house is not going to get you back to Godhead, but you do it anyway because it helps you cultivate the mode of goodness. So for certain people in certain stages in their spiritual progress, yes, it's fine. Let them do that. But, you know, in my particular stage, whenever I give something, it's for the direct expansion of Krishna consciousness or for a devotee. You know, if there's a devotee suffering, a devotee needs something, then I'll do that. But
better example would be just like if someone gives you some donation,
yeah.
Use it for devotional service.
Yeah, I have to use it for devotional service. I mean, if someone gives me something and that money I'm not going to use for just a pious activity. I'm going to use it for serving Krishna somehow, or help me build a temple, or buying a new dhoti for myself. That's pious. So, I don't buy dhotis for myself. I get disciples who get me dhotis. Isn't it? Every time I go to Vrindavan, I end up with more dhotis. More devotees than I came with. So I don't think I've ever bought a dhoti or a bead bag. That's what disciples are for. To buy dhotis and bead bags.
So Maharaj, is it cruel when you're walking down the street, there's a homeless person on the street?
Yeah.
Not give them money. If you give them prasadam, is it good?
Yes.
What if they don't take it and reject the
prasadam? That's their problem.
It's not...
That's not your problem.
Okay.
That's not your problem. You give them...
What if they take it and they throw it in the bin? What happens then?
Well, then the animals in the bin will actually get a chance.
No, we don't get a bed cover because it's in the bin.
No, you've tried your best. You've tried your best. I mean, sometimes devotees distribute books and the books go in the bin.
Yes.
I remember in the airport, the devotees would distribute books and then every day the cleaner would come and return the books to the devotees and charge the devotees and make some money from it. Not the full price of the books, so the devotees got the books back so they could distribute them again another time. But... if you give them money, what are they going to use the money for?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's the question. That's the question. What are they going to use the money for? I mean, in a Krishna conscious society, those people would get taken care of. They would be put in a particular home for those, you know, those individuals. And they'd be given prasadam, hearing the holy names, and they'd be made to work. That's shocking. Made to work. They'd be sent out, Prabhupada said, the plow department. That was Prabhupada's expression. They'd be sent out in the fields. All right. You want to eat. You go out in the fields. And if they were completely crazy, they would get taken care of. Because many of the people who live in the street have some psychological issues.
Even if the council wants them, gives them a home, they don't want to
go. No, they won't. No.
They
so
just want to stay there.
But they should be taken care of. They shouldn't be allowed to live on the street. They would be put into a place where there'd be, some of them would give some service. They'd have to do something. I mean, that's just, the Shudra, I mean, they're like super Shudras. Uber, let's say Uber Shudras. They would actually, you know, if they were able to work, they would be made to work. Not with a whip or chain or anything like that. But, you know, now it's time to go out and work. You know, it's just lazy.
People spoil them.
Yeah, they're spoiled.
They don't give, they don't do it.
No, but the thing is, very sad because we walk near the streets of Melbourne and we walk into...
Yeah, there's many of them there. New York
they
also.
They are there and they're sleeping there and you see they're sleeping in cold and all that.
Yes. So the government has to take them.
The government is trying to take them, but they won't move.
Well, forcibly, the government has to take them. If they have mental problems, like in America, for example, many of the people who went to war in Afghanistan, they're actually living on the street. Even though they have money, they have government assistance and everything like that because they're psychological problems. So the government has to have some system to take care of them psychologically.
In Australia, a lot of the people who are on the streets, they used to have good jobs, but what happened is that they started dealing with anxiety and depression.
No.
And
so the government has to take care of them. You can't.
See, the government doesn't want to deal with psychological issues. They are willing to give them a home, but they don't want to actually support them.
Well, that's not good. See, previously, the history is that previously there used to be many, let's say, places for people who had psychological issues, at least in America. I don't know about Australia.
In Australia, we have a few.
Yeah.
But then what happened is I think the government changed or something.
Yeah, the same thing with us.
They started looking at those places as mental hospitals and institutions.
Yeah, that's what
as
they
like
are.
A bad thing.
Yeah, and they're trying to do that in Melbourne too, but it's not working.
Yeah, because people...
On a daily basis, there are authorities coming in to take them, but they would not leave.
Everywhere.
They just want to
leave. Yeah, so anyway, I would put them in mental hospitals and take care of them nicely. Because that's the government's duty. I can't let people live on the street
like
that.
The problem is the government sees institutes like that as a bad thing. Like
it's very underfunded, mental health in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, so... No, it's the government's responsibility to take care of people who can't take care of themselves. And you don't let people freeze on the street. In New York, it's like that. You have people sleeping... Because there's underground heating systems in New York. So people sleep on top of the grates where they... You know where where's the exhaust?
The exhaust is, yes.
Yeah.
So they're sleeping on top of the grates, and it's not proper. I mean, the government should be taking care of these people, feeding them prasadam, and somehow or other getting them to work, if possible. If not, just take care of them. But giving them charity right now doesn't help them.
They might do a
dream. Yeah. Then, you know, what are they going to do with? What are they going to do with the money?
Right.
Food sometimes, but meat,
yeah,
alcohol.
Drugs.
You know, it's in many cases it's charity in the mode of ignorance. It's not even in goodness to help them. I mean, that's the government's duty. Okay, on that happy note.